You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
8:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully you are having a great start to this chilly Tuesday morning. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. If you want to get involved in the program, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Well, a lot's going on with bills that are being sent to not only the governor, but to the president. And some of them concern transgender youth and their health care and their ability to participate in sports. Abigail Swetz is the executive director for Fair Wisconsin. You can follow them at fairwisconsin.com. They work to build a fair, safe, and inclusive Wisconsin for all lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people by advancing, achieving, and protecting the LGBTQ civil rights through lobbying, legislative advocacy, and the rest. Abigail, thanks for being here this morning. We appreciate it. Let's start with the bills right here in Wisconsin that are that were sent to the governor. What does that entail for trans and gay youth?
Absolutely. Let's get into it. So there are a few bills that are currently on their way towards the governor right now. They have passed through the Assembly and the Senate in Wisconsin State Legislature. And I think the most important thing to keep in mind about these bills is that they are not about the makeup of a team. They are not about healthcare. They are about excluding trans people from public life. And we can't allow that, especially when our trans community is just facing so much hostility from literally every level of government. You mentioned that in terms of the federal government as well, right? And so, you know, as Wisconsinites, I'm sure can agree with me, we're getting a little sick of things like skyrocketing healthcare and public education that's not funded, and yet people are deciding to spend their time on attacking trans kids. It's really got to stop. And so just to detail the bills real quickly, we have two that are attacking the ability for a trans athlete to play on the team where they belong. We have one that would very, very strongly restrict, severely restrict the ability for a trans kid to use the names and name and pronouns that they also feel that belong to them in a school. And we have two that threaten access to youth gender affirming care. One that would essentially ban it for children under the age of 18. And another that is a ban by another name. It's about civil liability and malpractice and all these big words that really boil down to creating such a chilling effect that access would just be drastically reduced, which we're already seeing because of the federal threats. So again, it's about attacking trans people in a way that we cannot allow.
Let's talk a little bit about the medical care for a moment, because major medical groups in the state, including Children's Wisconsin and the Medical College of Wisconsin, actually registered against these particular bills. So why do you think so many medical organizations are opposing them when this is such a push coming from our legislature and our government?
I appreciate the question, because I think the way you asked it is exactly the reason that I need to explain that they are against this care, because this care is safe and this care is effective. It is good health care. The provision of gender affirming care to trans kids is guided by incredibly rigorous evidence-based standards of care. It is care that is provided by trained professionals who you just mentioned, who are registered against these bills. It is life-saving. It is medically necessary. It is accessed with full parental consent along with the child. And most importantly, it significantly reduces the rates of anxiety and suicidality and depression and gender dysphoria that these kids experience. And of course we want that, right? Like, we want what is best for every kid, and every kid in the state and country includes trans kids, and what we know is best for them from so much research and even just personal experience, I've seen it, is gender affirming care for kids. And it has to be accessible. And in too many states, it is already banned. It is not banned in Wisconsin, and this ban will not become law, which is all the more reason it is difficult to see that these bills keep getting introduced. They keep getting hearings that last hours and hours because the kids and their parents turn up to show that this care is important to them. And yet they are met with such disdain in some ways. And yet they still get voted on, right? And so it's so frustrating to see this sort of cyclical repetition of something that is so harmful.
Abigail Swetz is our guest. She's executive director for FAIR Wisconsin. Abigail, I can hear the voices in my head of the people who are forwarding these kinds of bills and who would support these kinds of bills. Can you, once and for all, clear up some misconceptions about people jumping or kids being either forced to or jumping into this medical care with no thought, about trans athletes taking over these sports teams, about pronouns being frivolous for these kids and they shouldn't, you know, you call them whatever gender you were born, that's your thing. Can you clear up some of this? Because it seems like, and, you know, I'm an older straight white guy. If I can get it, it seems like it should be easy for everybody to get, but there's still people who believe this garbage that's being shoveled out by some people.
I understand how it can be so frustrating to see the garbage continue to be shoveled out. And frankly, even more frustrating to see it continue to work on people, because it's difficult to break through, right, when there's so much disinformation. But what we have to remember is that trans people, trans kids are our family and friends. They are the people who shovel us out of snow in Wisconsin, right? They are our neighbors. And there is so much ugliness and disinformation about them because there's not a lot of them. It's a very small segment of our population. And so it is easy for some people who want more political power to scapegoat them into a thing that they are not. And what they are wonderful neighbors of ours, right? And so just a few things that you mentioned that, yes, of course, we should explain the truth as opposed to the disinformation that's spread. Gender-affirming care, like I mentioned, accessed for a youth with parental consent along the way. It is an arduous process. It is already difficult to access, not only because there's not a lot of providers, but more so even that there are frankly barriers on purpose to make sure that it is a thoughtful, considered decision by the youth and their family. Also, there's a lot of disinformation about what it actually is once it's accessed. There is no medical intervention before puberty for gender-affirming care. The first medical intervention that is beyond something like therapy, where of course we want to make sure that mental health providers are involved in the whole process. The first medical intervention could be puberty pause medication, entirely reversible. What is not reversible is puberty. We have all been through puberty. We know how much that changes the body. For a trans youth, accessing puberty pause medication at the age appropriate to access it is the possibility of a little time to further be considerate and thoughtful as that process continues, right? And then yes, maybe the next step is hormones. Not for everyone, but maybe it is to start puberty in a way that matches who they are. Again, we've all been through puberty. I know I didn't like being a 13-year-old going through it. Yeah. Can you imagine what it would mean to not only have these changes to a body, but changes to a body that doesn't feel like home anymore? That is something that we can change, we can avoid for these kids if we're able to make sure they can access the healthcare they really, really need. And so those are a few little things. Another thing you mentioned was about sports. Mm-hmm. Trans kids just want to play sports. It's not about so many things that this disinformation claims it's about. This is not about winning trophies. This is about finding a team you belong on. And again, just like we've all experienced puberty and how that change can affect the body and how uncomfortable and awkward those middle school years can be, we've also had moments where we felt like we belonged and moments where we felt like we didn't. And for a trans kid, the ability to belong on a team, to fit in with your peers, to play soccer because you love soccer, makes such a huge difference, because we know that yes, our youth are experiencing a mental health crisis, and our trans youth are experiencing an even more severe one. And that is not because they are trans. It is a societally pressured outcome. And if we as a society can be a pressure valve, if we can make it possible for them to play on a sports team where they can get the exercise that we know helps them, if they can access the healthcare we know is life-saving for them, then we can be that valve, that pressure valve, to make it possible for their mental health to be so much better. And these are just some things that, you know, are to me obvious, but I get it. If you don't know a trans kid and if you don't know a trans adult, maybe they're not as obvious. So I hope that maybe having a conversation like mm-hmm. this could help, mm-hmm. you know, a little window into an understanding.
Abigail, Governor Evers has promised to veto these bills yet again, because this is not the first attempt, right, by this particular legislature. And with the governor retiring next year, how concerned right now should parents of transgender students, people within the LGBTQ community, be that the next administration, what that could mean for some of the protections that Governor Evers has so rightly put into place in Wisconsin?
Great question. And I think in order to answer it, I need to sort of step out a little bigger for a second, because sure. Wisconsin exists, of course, as a state within a country that is growingly hostile to trans people and trans kids, specifically from this federal administration, this federal government. And so, as you pointed out, you know, Governor Evers, has said he will veto anything, any bill that will make this state less welcoming, less safe for the LGBTQ plus community. That's these bills. But the LGBTQ plus community is really struggling when it comes to any kind of safety in this country, right? Our state does not exist in a vacuum. And so we really need to make sure that the people we elect in upcoming elections are people who are going to help us insulate our state with protections against this hostile federal, these hostile federal attacks. And Wisconsin has a long way to go. We were the first state to include sexual orientation and our gender in our non-discrimination law in 1982. It is as old as me. And it does not include gender identity. That's because we were so far ahead of the times. Yay, in the 80s, we were called the gay rights state. Now we are very behind. We have to get gender identity into our non-discrimination law. That's an example of the bare minimum of a protection we need as a community. And that means we need people with the political will and the, and frankly, the human understanding that that is what is needed as our elected officials going forward.
Abigail, we only got about a minute and a half, but you mentioned before there were some federal bills that are proposed as well. Are they similar to the ones that the GOP is pushing for in Wisconsin, or are there some key differences?
That's a great question. There actually, well, there are bills, but the ones I'm sort of most focused on right now are actually proposed rules, which are sort of like the way a bill gets used on the ground. They're through the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services. The public comment period just ended. And they're similar to the bills because they are not a ban on this gender-affirming care, but they are an attempt to reduce the access so severely and hold, frankly, federal funding hostage in order to do that, that it would function like a ban. And so we at Fair Wisconsin have mobilized our community to turn in really robust public comment to try and stop these proposed rules from ever going into effect. They are not in effect, but we are already seeing reduced access to care just in that chilling effect because of these federal threats that just keep coming.
Well, keep up the good fight. If people want to support, if they want to get information, if they need to know what legislation is coming or being fought against, fairwisconsin.com is the website. Abigail Swetz is the executive director for Fair Wisconsin. We appreciate the conversation this morning, Abigail. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Abigail. It is 8:19 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. Coming up, we are going to talk about what happens to all of this tariff money we suddenly have. You're listening to Civic Media, the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Oh, if there was ever an inside joke, ladies and gentlemen, I apologize. That is one of them.
I got nothing. Like, we might be off the rails.
Someday we will explain that. After our unprecedented success, that's when we will explain that rejoin. Welcome back. It is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan. She's Jamie Martinson. And you are you, and we want you involved in the conversation. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. All right. What do you think should happen to all the money that was collected from the illegal tariffs? Oh, that's right. The Supreme Court said that the $175 billion in tariff revenue that came into the country because Donald Trump decided he was going to bypass Congress and put in these tariffs. Well, we got all this money sitting there. And three Senate Democrats are calling for the government to refund that money, Jamie.
Yes.
Would you like a check? Do you want a check? It's going to come with the other ones.
Well, it turns out that each family in this country would be owed right around anywhere from $1,300 to $1,700. So that will be in the mail with all of the other checks that we're supposed to be getting in 2 weeks. 2 weeks, by the way. But just for clarity, let's say it again. The Supreme Court ruled that these tariffs were illegally collected under the President of the United States.
So, again, that's the distinction. Putting on my logical guy hat, that money should then be returned.
I mean, right. When
we took it illegally, you got to return it.
That's usually what happens in these cases.
I'm sure there's records of who paid what.
Senators Ron Wyden, Ed Markey, and Gene Shaheen want Customs and Border Protection to issue refunds within the next 180 days with interest, prioritizing the small businesses, which I also think is fascinating. And small businesses have taken the brunt. I mean, we know that some of them had to stock up on a lot of the different merchandise that they do provide or goods they provide in anticipation for these tariffs so that they didn't have to mark up the prices as badly or put out those bigger orders when things needed to come back into the stores because of these tariffs. Now, the senators are arguing that the tariffs amounted to an illegal tax hike that hurt families and manufacturers. Now, of course, as you can imagine, Brian, the Trump administration completely disagrees with all of this.
Of course they do. Well, who's the Supreme Court? What are these people?
They're
compromised
anything.
By foreign interests, allegedly.
Yes.
They're despicable.
Yes. Now, I found this fascinating when U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent was at a conference this weekend. This is what he had to say. This is cut one. There it is.
Surprise. Surprise, folks. Yes. Just remember, we weren't paying for the tariff.
No.
The other countries were, but now all the numbers say that, as Jamie pointed this out, the average American family, you paid for that tariff to the tune of $1,300 to $1,700 just in the last year. Small businesses have paid the tariff, costing some to have to close down, some to raise the prices on you, adding to that 13 to 17. Bigger companies, like we talked about Harley-Davidson the other day, have paid it. So the fallacy that other countries pay for these tariffs, if you're not understanding that now, you're as bad at math as I am, but at least I can grasp these numbers and go, wait, I understand who pays for what. You know, this wasn't Dutch treat for the world. This was we pay and they get the money.
Now, in case you're wondering, even with Scott Bessent basically saying the quiet part out loud, this bill is unlikely to pass. And the Trump administration says that any of these refunds would need to be decided by the courts, not the White House. Funny how we trust the courts now. Right. It's funny how in the midst of all of this, we'll go trust the courts to make this decision. But we can't trust the Supreme Court to say that the tariffs are illegal. But in this case of the refund, yes, we will have to hand this one back over to the courts. It's weird how that works. Very, very strange.
It's no surprise. But here's the bigger question. OK, we took in this $175 billion. Mm-hmm. That's not in dispute. By either side, got $175 billion. It's sitting there. if you don't refund it to the people who paid it illegally, mm-hmm. where is it going to go? Who is going to profit from this? You can draw your own conclusions. I know Jamie and I both have our own opinions of where this might go. And based on the track record of this administration, you might have an idea where some or all of it will go. But that's not where it should go.
Right. And I think for a lot of people, the bigger question is going to be this. If the tariffs were meant to help American families and the court says they're unlawful, who actually owns fixing that? Because at some point, measured voters are going to care, aren't going to care about which branch is making the decision. They're going to care whether or not they feel like they got their money back. And if you look at recent polling, people aren't feeling so great about the tariffs or the economy, and that transcends all party lines. So I think at some point, voters are going to start asking questions. And I think it's also interesting that this is all coming up in a midterm election, because politically, it's a powerful message to be going into the midterms if you're the Democrat saying, refund the money. That's a pretty clean message. Who's got the money? Where is it at? That's clean. That's a clean message for the Democrats.
It is a very clean message. It's going to come down to, are the Democrats strong enough to use it and hammer it home nonstop and ask, where's that money? Hey, America, you voted for one kind of tariff that doesn't exist because it's imaginary. You paid an extra $1,700 this year. Mm-hmm. Do you have that kind of money? And in this climate, except for the president's friends, a lot of people are going to go, I don't have an extra $1,700. I could have used that $1,700 for anything else in my life other than giving it to some illegal tariff.
Absolutely. It should be an interesting battle. 8:29 right now, Daybreak on the Civic Media Network. It's 8:35 right now. We hope that you are having a great morning. If you're listening in Hayward on BZH, we appreciate it. Or even in Wisconsin Rapids on WFHR. Or right here or in Appleton and Oshkosh on WISS. I was going to say on MDX, but our MDX listeners are listening to Stephanie Miller right now, so they won't hear the shout out. The rest of the network will hear the shout out.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Paul Kiefer is our guest because Air Wisconsin Airlines, you may be familiar with them. They were another victim of the nationwide decline in regional air service. 60 years old, Air Wisconsin. They laid off a bunch, hundreds of employees in Appleton and Milwaukee at the end of last year. But now, reporting and investigating on Wisconsin Watch has discovered something new is happening at Air Wisconsin. That's why Paul is here. He's been writing for Wisconsin Watch since September. He focuses largely on immigration and data reporting, and he is here with us now. Paul, thanks for being here. We appreciate it. For those of us who aren't really familiar with Wisconsin Air, can you give us a brief history leading up to January when they decided to lay off all these people?
Yeah, as you mentioned, it's a 60-year-old airline. They have operated as a regional carrier for a long time. They've sometimes done service further afield, depending on their contracts. Last year, they terminated at the very beginning of 2025. They terminated a contract to provide aircraft crews and services to American Airlines, and then planned to pivot to a program that subsidized air service to rural communities or underserved communities. That didn't pan out. They laid off hundreds of employees and furloughed others. And by the end of the year, the company's parent company, which is also Appleton based, was looking to sell Air Wisconsin entirely. So there was chatter about various buyers, but yeah, the final sale was announced on January 9th. So I'm happy to hop into sort of what transpires there. But the big takeaway is that regional airlines all over the country have been spiraling. Air Wisconsin is not different, and they are all trying to find some way to remain viable. And that's how the story starts.
Sure. And so let's start right there, Paul, because based on your reporting and this flight data that you analyzed, and it's an incredible piece over at Wisconsin Watch. So WisconsinWatch.org again is the website. What's the clearest evidence that you found that Air Wisconsin's business model started fundamentally changing after that sale to CSI Aviation on January 9th?
Right. So first things first, CSI Aviation is It is a company based in New Mexico. It is an air charter company. It has provided charter services to the Department of Homeland Security, which is the parent agency of ICE, since 2024. So, you know, going into the sale, we know that this is what the parent company does. They purchase the brand Air Wisconsin and 13 of the airline's jets. We looked at flight data going backwards and then we kind of tracked it up through the middle of February. And up until January, we can only get flight data back to September 2025. But between September 2025 and January 9th, when the sale is finalized and announced, we see Air Wisconsin sort of limping along, doing what it's done for a long time, serving, you know, mostly Wisconsin airports, so Appleton and Milwaukee and Madison primarily, but also Lansing or Columbus, Ohio, or Bloomington, Indiana, or that kind of thing. Very abruptly, after the sale on January 9th, Air Wisconsin's flight patterns shift south. They start flying to the most noticeable ones are Alexandria, Louisiana, and El Paso, Texas. They also start flying to Minneapolis, which they hadn't been doing a whole lot previously. Flying to Minneapolis isn't all that notable in and of itself, because that's a very busy Midwestern airport. But Alexandria, Louisiana is a serious tell. Alexandria is not a big city. What it is the center of ICE's deportation flight operations. And it's a logistics center for many of the country's largest ICE detention facilities, which are in heavily concentrated in Louisiana and Mississippi. El Paso is another big city, but it also happens to be, you know, the El Paso airport is a stone's throw away from the country's largest ICE detention facility, and is sort of the secondary flight hub for ICE's deportation air operations. So
to interrupt for a second, Paul, you said Minnesota, Minneapolis made sense. It's all going to come out. But Air Wisconsin hadn't served Minneapolis prior to this, correct?
Or at least not in the flight data that we could pull between September and okay. You know, like they had maintained service to these mid-sized Midwestern airports. You know, I wouldn't call Lansing or Bloomington huge.
No.
But yes, they hadn't been in that period for which we can get flight data. They hadn't been serving Minneapolis. It just so happens that the sale happened, you know, the sale took place midway through Operation Metro Surge in Minnesota, which we're all familiar with, the ongoing-ish ICE operation in Minneapolis. And they started flying from Minneapolis to Alexandria, Louisiana, and to El Paso, Texas.
Okay.
You know, it is, I think we can be, you know, without having someone inside the cockpit telling us exactly what's going on, I think it would be fair to say that some of those flights, at least some of those flights, were chartered by DHS.
Okay.
Yeah. So Alexandria, as you mentioned, became a hub for these deportation flights, and Air Wisconsin flown there dozens of times since this acquisition. Is it up until this time, had it been really unusual for Wisconsin-based airlines to be flying that frequently into this relatively small Louisiana airport? Or does it feel, did your reporting show any sort of coincidence in that?
From what I can tell, again, with flight data only going back to September, we can only say so much. They had not flown to Alexandria up until that point. They had flown to New Orleans, but that, you know, Air Wisconsin was doing some charter operations, and, you know, it could have been someone wanted to fly to New Orleans for their wedding or whatever. But no, not Alexandria. Alexandria is a serious tell, because there is not a whole lot of other reason to fly to Alexandria, Louisiana, aside from DHS charter flights. You know, Air Wisconsin has done service to the DC area in the past when, you know, prior to the sale. So, you know, we spot some Air Wisconsin flights heading to BWI, Baltimore, Washington, since the sale. And that could just be coincidental, or that could also be related to its relationship with DHS now. But, you know, the real tell is Alexandria, and to some extent El Paso.
And Paul Kiefer's our guest. He's a writer for Wisconsin Watch. You can read all his work at wisconsinwatch.org. If I'm so inclined, which I understand why the story is important, and the writing is great, but there's going to be some people go, why should we care what a private company is doing? Why should we, you know, it's they're in business, they're making money for their shareholders. Maybe they are working for DHS, but why is this an important story?
I think that's their prerogative, but it's worth recognizing that in a moment of economic instability for a whole bunch of industries, the regional air industry included, federal contracts seem to present a source of stability. But also noteworthy, Air Wisconsin isn't the only airline to have tested this
out. That's what I was going to ask. So
Avelo, which is not a regional airline, but it's sort of a hyper budget airline, tested this out briefly last year, conducting deportation flights for DHS. And they backed out in January, but after a public backlash. But in their public statements, they also said that the contract hadn't paid off as much as they were expecting to. So it's not necessarily a guarantee that a federal contract or a contract with DHS, which needs a whole bunch of air capacity right now for its operations, is going to be the salvation for a struggling regional airline. I think that would be a step too far.
So neither, if people check out your writing over at wisconsinwatch.org, you mentioned that neither CSI nor Harbor Diversified responded to any requests for comment. So what key questions remain unanswered based on what you found so far?
Well, and I'll also note, credit where credit is due, the Appleton Post-Crescent broke the news about the sale. And as, you know, in reading their writing, they didn't get responses from CSI or Harbor Diversified either. And so what we pulled together was evidence of the change in flight patterns. We didn't break the news of the sale. But I would still like to know is, you know, to what extent they are actually receiving a return on, to what extent the contract is providing the financial stability that they needed. I would like to know whether we can assume that all flights to El Paso have been part of their charter operations for DHS. I think we can reasonably assume that for Alexandria, but I would like to be fact-checked. I would like to know to what extent they are transporting people directly from Milwaukee. Maybe, you know, if they're taking people from the detention facility in Dodge County, that would be interesting. And I'd like to get a sense of the economics of all of this. I mean, do they see themselves as different from Avelo? Do they think that this will work out for them? Do they have broad thoughts on the fate of regional airlines and what other options might exist to keep those businesses afloat? I think that all of those things would be helpful it would be useful to have some answers on all those fronts.
Well, very interesting story and great writing. WisconsinWatch.org is where you can find all of Paul Kiefer's work. Good luck on this. And listen, if you get to all those answers, we want to talk to you again and share them. Yeah. We'll be reading them first, though, on Wisconsin Watch. Paul, have a great day. Thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much,
Paul. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Take care. You too.
Thank you.
It is, it's one of those, this is a tough one because, yeah, there might be public outrage, which I, you know, that's fair. But since they don't serve the public anymore, if I'm in the corporate seat, I go, I don't care what the public thinks. This is, we don't have public flights. We're a private company doing private contracting.
Right. And, you know, and I took this a step further when I knew that Paul was coming on the show and actually did not to the degree of investigation that he did, but obviously did a, you know, just a little dip into the pond of all of this. From January 2025 to January of 2026, ICE carried more than 2,200 deportation flights to 79 different countries. That's a 46% increase in flights and a major jump in destinations compared to just the year before. 25 of those countries had never previously received ICE deportation flights. Now, domestic transfer or shuffle flights more than doubled, topping 9,000 in 1 year. In January alone, ICE averaged about 36 domestic transfer flights per day. Minneapolis obviously saw a sharp spike tied to federal enforcement operations. And Paul mentioned the fact that CSI Aviation wasn't the only one, working through some of these different avenues, right? So let's be fair. But ICE's main air contractor is CSI, and they've received more than $650 million in recent contracts, according to recent reporting, including a no-bid deal worth up to $219 million. Their CEO, by the way, donated heavily to the RNC and to Trump. There's another company, Global X, that handled nearly 80% of ICE deportation flights in 2004 and expects about $65 million a year from its contract. Its executive chairman has donated to Republican candidates, including Wisconsin's own Ron Johnson. Classic Air Charter previously held an $885 million ICE contract and is led by executives who've donated to Trump-aligned groups. This list actually goes on and on. It's not short.
No, and it's not going to change. And again, we may not like their business model, but we don't have a lot. We can't do much about it because they're trying to survive, like you said. All right. Well, listen, when all else fails, we can always have a clean house. Mr. Clean will help us.
He will.
But not for long.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Hey!
It is catchy.
It is. Yeah. I'm actually kind of impressed.
Now, people are probably wondering why we came back from a commercial with a jingle.
And we are not being paid by Mr. Clean or any of his subsidiaries.
No.
We are not puppets of the Mr. Clean. Shout out to Mr. Clean, though, wearing an earring way before it was fashionable.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of a Yul Brynner of home cleanliness.
He's a handsome guy.
Handsome guy. But, Jamie, after 68 years, Mr. Clean is hanging it up.
He is. He's retiring.
Mr. Clean is retiring.
We got to put that in air quotes, though, apparently.
Yeah, but it's going to be sad to see him go. He's another icon of Americana.
Yeah.
Another spokes image, you know, that we will now say goodbye
Longtime mascot for Procter & Gamble. He announced that after 68 years, introduced in 1958, by the way, his tenure will officially wrap up this year. At a news conference that was held just a few days ago. I didn't know Mr. Clean had a news conference.
Mr. Clean, very important.
He is. He said he earned some time off after a career with zero stains on the record. See the pun there? I love it. He also revealed that his first name is Veritably. Did you know that? That Mr. Clean's first name is Veritably.
Jamie, I treat Mr. Clean with the respect he deserves. I keep his first name off my mouth. He is, or out of my mouth. God forbid I misspeak.
wow.
And no, I didn't. So Mr. Veritably Clean?
Veritably Clean is his actual name. Yes.
Okay.
Now, the company says that there will be no changes to the brand name. There's going to be no changes to the packaging or the products. Mr. Clean, obviously, you heard that iconic jingle. That debuted in 1959, and it's had several updates over the decades. The retirement announcement is tied to a larger reveal planned for March 4th with more details expected then. Now, I don't know how you up the cleaning game.
I was right. And if he's not retiring, but he is retiring, does that mean there's going to be a new Mr. Clean? Like
Mrs. Clean?
Jr.?
Is there going to be a Mrs. Clean?
Maybe
Clean, Clean Jr.?
Maybe
I don't know.
The whole Clean family.
I always
almost, kind of.
I always appreciated that Mr. Clean was a dude because especially when Mr. Clean came onto the market in 1958, being the household woman and taking care of the home and doing all the chores was what was expected, right? He came around and he was a dude on the packaging. And maybe that's why he was so handsome. You had to get housewives to like buy into it somehow. I don't know.
He was very buff.
I don't know
when he had time to work out with all the cleaning he was doing. And his pristine white tight t-shirt.
I know. And his white, perfectly white eyebrows. I mean, he's got
a shiny head.
It is very shiny. Well, he's clean.
And he was one of the guys. Yes, it is clean. He's one of the first guys that made bald cool. Him and Yul Brynner in The King and
yes,
I.
Yes, yes. Now, veritably, because I feel like we're on a first-name basis at this point, says okay. He plans to pursue new hobbies, though he hasn't said what those are. Of course, fans had to react with a lot of surprise and some nostalgia online as well. Some actually urged him to, reconsider, and even other brands offered him well wishes.
Beyond, oh, that's nice.
Yeah, beyond the cleaning products, of course, Veritably Clean has inspired everything from dolls to costumes as well as other merchandise over the years, proving that shine extended well beyond just your kitchen sink. See what we did there? Yeah, a few puns.
I love the Mr. Clean sponges that you can get marks off the wall.
Yes. Right? Oh, the magic erasers.
Magic eraser, yep.
I love myself a good magic eraser, and I have been known to buy them in bulk with varying levels of...
sizes. I like the different sizes and textures.
Some have like the cleaner built right in now, so as you soon as you get them wet, they get a little soapy there. That's, when you're... It's the best way. Love myself a good magic eraser.
Do you think they're going to go with a live action, like Old Spice has gone with the Old Spice guy?
Yes.
The young, attractive.
Yes.
Maybe Mr. Clean goes with a younger model.
Maybe.
Live action.
I feel like maybe there's a Mr. Clean Jr. coming. Like maybe Veritably
passes the baton to his son.
Like Veritably is retiring, and now it's time to hand off for the cleaning legend to continue into the next generation. Maybe.
What's his son's name? Not So?
Yes. Not So Clean.
Not So Clean. Wow.
Well, would that go without? I mean, you gotta generation, right?
It's been 68 years. True. I just found out this one had a first name. We don't know. Don't scoff. Not So maybe is, you're never as good as your dad in their opinion. He's not so good, not so clean.
Think about this though. Mr. Clean has survived disco, bell bottoms, cassette tapes, dial-up internet, and whatever else is happening in the world right now. And through all of it, he's been spotless. And I think that is something to be proud of.
All right, on your Mount Rushmore of brand mascots, who would you put?
Oh,
Mount Rushmore of brand mascots. You got four.
Let's see. I think the Meow Mix kitty goes right up there. Because everybody knows the Meow Mix kitty. This is a hard one. Oh, it's got to be probably the bird from Cocoa Puffs. Yep, he'd be good. Mr. Clean would probably be up there. Mm-hmm. And I get one more, don't I? Because there's four.
Yep.
This is so hard. Brand mascots. I know this
could be a live or cartoon.
I'm gonna say I'm gonna say Colonel Sanders from KFC.
Even though he was the guy.
He was a real guy.
But
yeah.
All right. I would go Mr. Clean.
Okay.
I would go Tony the Tiger.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
I throw in the Marlboro Man.
Sure.
And then I struggle, but I think I may have to put Snuggle.
The bear
up there.
Yeah.
So that might be my Mount Rushmore of mascots.
If I had honorable mentions, I'd say Orville Redenbacher and the Energizer Bunny.
See, now this is something, had we brought it up an hour ago, people would be flooding the text line. But you'll have to wait for another day because our time is drawing to a close with you on another day of Daybreak. But we'll be back tomorrow with more facts. And, tomorrow it's going to be exciting
after
as we break down
the
State of the Union. We're covering it again. What time tonight? What's the deal here on
8
Civic
o'clock.
Media? 8
o'clock. You can find coverage starting at 8 o'clock tonight here on Civic Media, 8:59. And you are going to be listening to Stephanie Miller joining her In Progress now on the Civic Media Network. Have a great day.
See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.